Hi, this is John Mosby, author of Fearful Symmetry, the essential guide to all things Highlander, and you are listening to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Fans to episode 55 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, games, special events, and more. I'm Kevin. I'm one of your Blood of Kings hosts, but you know I don't do this alone. I need my fellow immortal brother and fellow Highlander aficionado. With me is my co-host, Norman. Norman, welcome, man.
What are we, 2 weeks now? 2 weeks to the greatest convention of ever?
Yeah, Highlander Worldwide Gathering, man.
That's right.
Celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Highlander TV series.
Now, I'm going to be sad when we actually don't get that get to introduce that part of the show segment anymore, because we've been talking about this probably ever since January of this year being 2017. It's been a huge buildup, and we're so close, and we're 2 weeks away as the time of this recording is happening, and we're very excited. We're very excited about it.
Yeah, and I was excited they released the design for the Highlander Worldwide t-shirts, too, that are now on pre-order, so make sure you guys are up there checking that out, so that's really cool.
And they're like rock concert shirts, right? The rock concert tour?
They got the dates of all their gathering conventions and stuff like that.
Yeah, I haven't been to, I don't think, any of those particular conventions, but I know a lot of people who are, I think this is going to be like the sum total of a great experience for them, like all the Highlander Worldwides they've done, like 1 through 9, this being the 10th.
Yes, yeah. Well, I just wanted to tease this episode, Norman, before we get into our little bit of housekeeping here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about the prize. This is something that's been kind of out there with fans. It's been discussed. What is the prize? Why are immortals fighting for it? Is it worth fighting for?
Yeah.
And I thought this was a great topic. This was something that you wanted to talk about for a while.
Yeah, and it actually kind of was inspired by something that you said before. We were talking about the rules of the game, you know, many episodes back, and all of our listeners can check out our backlog, and I encourage you to do so. But you said, what if two friends were there in the end? Why do they have to fight? If, say, Fitzcairn lived, then, say, Duncan and Fitzcairn were the last two immortals fighting, would they fight for the ultimate prize?
And also, too, I was thinking about Amanda and Duncan. You know,
sure.
They would be, you know, immortal lovers forever, you know, and I think they would enjoy life. You know, I don't see them turning on each other, you know.
Right. Which means we're gonna dive into this a little bit further, but which means that if that scenario did happen, then why would they fight this entire time just to get to that point?
Exactly. We're going to dive into that deeply. This has been something Highlander fans have thought about, discussed, and debated for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that. But before we do, though, we want to remind, first of all, I want to thank all the fans on Blood of Kings and all of our listeners. I know we got some new listeners as well. And I'm really excited about seeing a lot of these fans in person at the Highlander Worldwide Convention, as I know you are. But we want to remind the new people out there how you can find us. You can find us on our master feed, fpnet.podbean.com. That is the official website where we have all of our Fandom Podcast Network programming. We also are on the Podbean app. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play for Android users. On Instagram, you can find the Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings there. Of course, mentioned, we have the Blood of Kings Highlander Fandom Group Facebook page, and we also have the sister page, the Highlander CCG collectible card game page under the Blood of Kings name. You can email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod, and mentioned on Instagram, Blood of Kings Podcast. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norman, where can we find you?
You can always find me there on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
Ah, very cool. Very cool. So yeah, man, this is really cool. I'm really excited about this because, well, we got t-shirts, man. We got t-shirts.
We do. We've got Bock swag. B-O-K swag. Bock
yes,
swag.
We have a partnership now with TeePublic. They came to us, said that they like us and like what we're doing here. You can go up there and get your Blood of Kings t-shirt or long sleeve shirt or sweatshirt. You can get different colors. And also, we've just released our Team Iron Pipe logo for the t-shirt too. So I'm really excited about that. And we have t-shirt logos for other great programs as well on the Fandom Podcast Network. And Norm, I know you picked up some shirts there, right?
Well, of course I picked up the Blood of King shirts. I designed them.
Well, of course. And I think Sean Dempsey ordered another 10, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Is that what that was?
We called him out. And all joking aside, thanks, Sean, for supporting the show. I do have to make one small addendum to the credits there. We forgot to mention Mike on Twitter, our esteemed editor who can
thank you, yes,
who can literally chop the entire show out and just leave this segment just mentioning his name. So if you'd like to find Mike on Twitter, you can find him at Immortal Chimoli because he is captain of hashtag Team Chimoli.
This is true. This is true. And please leave us a review on iTunes so you know, new fans can find us there, and we have we still have a great contest going there. Norm, briefly remind our listeners about our contest.
That's right. You have a few weeks left to enter this contest, and it's our iTunes Reviews contest. So from now until the end of October, which is only from this podcast's production date and release, it's only a couple weeks away. So make sure that you don't miss out on this great opportunity to write us a review on iTunes. And what we're looking for is a really nice creative review from you. And we want you to be honest. We want you to be creative and let us know what you think about Blood of Kings. You can find Blood of Kings on the master feed on the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, and then you can add your review there. You can also give us a star rating. Star ratings allow us to see or let people see how we're doing in terms of the influence of our podcast and the podcast ratings there on iTunes. The more creative your review, the better chances you will have as being picked as one of the winning entries. Now, originally, we were just going to award the winner, the grand prize winner, their own pick of a fan favorite episode. We've done that in the past, and we've had a lot of fun talking about an episode plus an episode review. So you'll have two episodes dedicated to your choice. But we've also added in a really special few extra prizes, one of which is a signed copy of Adrian Paul's My Immortal Journey. That is a special two-disc CD collection that is an interview with Ethan Dettenmeyer of Combat Radio with Adrian Paul about his origins and some special memories of Highlander, the TV series, and also a book called Images, which is a nice collection of Adrian Paul when he was a younger laddie and growing up. And those are very special and precious moments to him that he has released in his book Images. So if you win, you get your fan pick, you get the signed Adrian Paul copy of Immortal Journey and Images. I think that's a really good prize package for writing your review for us on iTunes.
All right. All right. I think it'd be a lot of fun to do. And I think it'll be a fun challenge for them to pick the episode too. I would love it if someone picked a Raven episode because I need to go back and watch some of those. So that'd be kind of like watching them almost for the first time. I just haven't watched them in a long time.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to revisit the Raven every once in a while. I know some people are like, you know, but no, it is. It is. So.
Well, as I said, first of all, I want to mention that it was a fun episode, the last episode we did, Blood of Kings 54, The Armory Chronicles, with, of course, our editor, Mike Sellers, discussing mm-hmm. the weapons of Season 1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought we were pretty thorough with that stuff there. Was there any of those weapons that you brought up that you kind of, you know, you look, go, man, that was a really cool weapon. Maybe I'll get that one. Or maybe I was like, one you kind of forgot about.
So in the episode Lady and the Tiger, that's the episode that Amanda and Zachary Blaine were first introduced. There was a really great scene where Jason Isaacs, who's, you know, he's no stranger to fandom now because he's Captain Gabriel Lorca on Star Trek Discovery. And obviously, you know, Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter series. But the way that he described and held the a saber.
Yeah,
it was an Austrian Damascus steel saber. And it's as if he owned that weapon his entire life, not just as the character of Zachary Blaine, but as Jason Isaacs himself. It was a gorgeous scene, the way he handled it, and it just, that weapon just looked so gorgeous. I love sabers.
I started thinking a lot about Grayson's sword and the, mm-hmm. and the style of that blade. But I was thinking about Amanda's one-handed sword too. I think that thing's really cool because apparently she can hide that anywhere.
Apparently. Apparently, maybe we'll ask Elizabeth Grayson, exactly where did that sword come from when you were wearing your skin-tight cat burglar outfit?
Well, as we teased earlier, we're here to talk about the prize. What is it really worth? Yes. But before we do, I'm a little hungry, a little thirsty too, and ready for some blues. Norm, what do you say we head on into Joe's?
I think that's a great idea.
All right, here we go. Joe's. All right, back at Joe's. Where's Joe? I hear house music. He's in the back doing something. Maybe he's checking some inventory. And we kind of made a little mess of the game room, you know, recently.
We did.
Hopefully he'll let us back in there.
We were doing a lot of play testing.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I don't know if he has a poker night. Maybe he's got like a poker night with his fellow watchers or something, you know. And
I don't know. It never goes well when you have a bunch of watchers talking about immortals playing poker. It never goes well.
For one thing, they're not watching.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
Well, as always, we love to update Adrian Paul's sword experience. And by the time this episode comes out, literally right around the corner, we're going to be right near one of those. And that, of course, is the two events that he has scheduled at the Highlander Worldwide Convention at the Crown Plaza at the Los Angeles International Airport location. And he's got one at 9:00 and then I think another one at 2:00. And I was trying to find out what choreography he was going to be teaching. And I can't find that information yet. So I don't know if he's mentioned that yet. But I want to ask you something, Norm. Now, of mm-hmm. course, everyone would love the Duende choreography. But
sure.
Let's take that off the table real quick. Mm-hmm. Is there another movie or TV show or an episode of Highlander that you would love to see him do some choreography for? Because the reason why I'm bringing that up is because I recently watched... And you have talked about that sword fight in The Princess Bride,
uh-huh.
you know, with Dread Pirate Roberts, of course, Wesley disguised and Inigo Montoya. Great fight scene.
Yeah.
That would be kind of fun to do. But is there something that comes up that you would like to see?
Well, I think he's actually teased this out for something that's going to happen maybe next year. But I'm not sure if a lot of fans realize, but in a James Bond movie called Die Another Day, there's a scene where James Bond and the villain, and I don't know Die Another Day that well, but he's kind of like...
That's the one with Madonna.
Yeah, and she's actually the fencing maestro of yes. that particular fencing parlor.
Yes.
And the fighter that he's... The villain that James Bond encounters, they start as a gentlemanly duel, and they yeah. switch maybe like, I don't know, 6 or 7 different weapons. They go from fencing foils to épées, which is just a heavier blade, to sabers, which is heavier yep. blade, that like one-handed swords to broadswords. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And it's really great because you're seeing so many different styles. That would be a lot of fun. I know that Adrian primarily works with katanas or the katana or I should say bokens, katana styles. But yes.
So I'm looking up on the dates for the sword experience.
Sorry, folks. Sorry. Like Kevin's eyes just went like super wide there because this is radio and not TV. His eyes just bugged out. So I was like, what?
Yeah. Sorry. It just popped up because I was doing my homework here looking at the dates. Okay. First of all, of course, he's got the one that we just spoke of at the Highlander Worldwide Convention.
Uh-huh.
October 28th, he's got Baton Rouge. Okay. Then November 10th is the Rhode Island one, and December 3rd is Chicago.
Yeah.
And January 28th, Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, my gosh. Shut the front door.
Yes.
Whoa,
and
that's happening.
It says here it's January 28th, Atlanta B Complex starts at 9 a.m., and let me see what it says here. I'm not familiar with that area though, so I'm gonna have to look that up. But yeah, that's breaking news here. This is great.
That's awesome.
I had heard rumors that he was looking to come here, So that is really cool.
That's
right. That is in my neck of the woods.
The SXP at the ATL.
Well, that's very cool. I'm excited about that. Atlanta.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know a few friends of mine that are excited about that. So
oh, yeah. You got to go do a whole thing.
Yeah. Right?
You got to do a whole, you know, group party thing. That'll be fun.
So there we go. New date announced for the Sword Experience. I'm excited about
that. Is that the most recent new date? Is that the only new date?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the most recent one.
All right. Cool.
That's January 28th.
Right on.
All right. And of course, we've been talking about the Highlander Anniversary Convention. Dates are Friday, October 20th through Sunday, the 22nd, which by the time this episode comes out should be about a week later.
Yep.
But we want to remind people that are going to be showing up that are listening to this before they leave. Thursday, October 19th from 7 to 10 p.m., the Blooded Kings 25th Anniversary Convention Meetup.
The real reason why you're coming to the gathering. Right.
Exactly. Crown Plaza, Main Lobby, Century Tap Room, which will actually going to be renamed as Joe's.
Oh, that's going to be so cool.
And we're going to have a cool little giveaway for those that show up. So make sure you show up. And please let us know you're coming. We on our Facebook Bloody Kings page, we have an event page there. And if you're going to come, click on that. Let us know so we can get an idea how many people are coming.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited, man. Oh, it's so close. Two weeks.
So close. So close. Yeah.
So excited.
Yep.
All right. Also, great news. In a couple episodes ago, man, we had Chris Castaneto from the Highlander the Duel card game Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
They met their ceiling, but he says the official card game is now fully funded on Kickstarter. Right. Grab your copy and help unlock stretch goals. So Norm, if I understand that correctly, it says please we want still people to donate so then they can afford to add other cool things to the game, right?
That's correct. So when you reach your primary goal in Kickstarter, that means that you're fully funded and you've actually obtained the funds needed to produce the base game that was advertised. Now, because it hasn't closed yet, there are still several weeks where you can continue funding the project so that you can give more venture capital to improve all the components of the game. So there are, there were like five new cards, there are upgraded models and a playing mat, and who knows? But it's just additional venture capital so that Chris can produce the best possible version of this game that he can.
That's really cool. I'm really excited for him. Got funded. That means we're going to be getting our game. I know I did the, what was it? The only, there can be only one, I think one where it comes with the play mat and mm-hmm. some other stuff. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So we're going to have to add this to the Blood of Kings CCG collectible card game page. Do we have to modify that? Because that should be gaming. Like that was the only game in town really. And now you have this, which it's not a collectible card game per se. But it is a game with cards, so
yes,
we'll see how we have to modify that. But it's going to be a lot of fun talking to people about their strategies as they play the game.
All right. Well, Norm, on about this time, we have your immortal challenge. You ready for this?
Yeah, sure. You know what? I'm going to go in with the spirit as intended. I'm going to take your challenge like a man. Like a man,
this immortal
man,
challenge
man.
Is ladies' night. Ooh. And I have a choice between two. Do you want the easy one or do you want I think it's the little bit harder one?
Dealer's choice.
All right. You sure?
No, but there's no guarantee that I'll get the first one either.
I'm going to go with a little bit harder one here. I'm trying to remember if I did this one before, so forgive me if I have because I don't remember.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Mm.
Ladies' night choice. Here we go. This immortal was a Norman French immortal and a former lover of Duncan MacLeod. In the late 20th century, she was the owner of an internationally known modeling agency, though she had a poor reputation with other agencies. This immortal was born in Normandy. In her youth, she was the most beautiful and desired woman on the continent. When she failed to produce an heir for her husband, he murdered her, triggering her mortality. This immortal's first teacher was Grace Chandel. This immortal was living in 1659 as a wealthy woman in Normandy, where she met the young immortal, Duncan MacLeod, who saved her coach from highwaymen. This immortal was fascinated by him and invited him to her home. There, she tried over several months to make him a gentleman, to dress him anew, to teach him fine table manners, with limited success. She was alluring, but also highly manipulative and possessive. She could not cope with rejection. After months together, McLeod, feeling constrained, made noises about moving on. She told him he would not leave her. Increasingly unhappy under this immortal's thumb, McLeod fell in love with a portress, I guess someone that makes, portraits, that this immortal hired to paint him. When McLeod informed this immortal he was grateful but ready to move on, she became irrationally furious and murdered the young artist, Louise Barton, by drowning her. When McLeod confronted this immortal, she denied everything, hoping to be able to regain his undivided attention. When she failed, she threatened him with the sword. McLeod defeated her with ease, and he left her, unarmed but alive. This immortal's watcher during this time period was Giselle Dupin. Who is this immortal?
Did you say this was the harder of the two?
Yes. Of the two that I had chosen.
Of the two that you chose. Fair enough. You know, the toughest, the easier thing about the female immortals in Highlander is that we only had really like a handful of standout ones because you're dealing with like the significant villain of an episode.
Right.
So this episode was, I know this one, believe it or not. And thank you for taking it easy on me. No matter how hard you say how hard it's going to be. Because you know that I've been pretty much 100% fail the last couple episodes. The episode is Chivalry.
Yes.
And right. The episode and the immortal villain that you have just described is Kristen Gillis.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is correct, sir.
Head of the modeling agency and someone who Duncan did not behead, but Mythos beheaded.
That's right.
Right.
Status deceased, 1995, Mythos.
And when she dueled him, he said, you know, someone who was born long before the age of chivalry.
The chivalry, that's right. Yeah. Portrayed by Ann Terkel.
Yeah, Ann Terkel, so, yeah. Who seduced Richie as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Richie had, Stan had a couple of steamy scenes with Ann Terkel. Yeah.
Lucky guy.
So thanks for making that hard on me, Kevin.
All right. Well, before we go, I always got to ask you, what you drinking?
Oh, Maker's 46. When you have to go with what you know, you go with Maker's 46. Besides, I think that bourbon and blues is a little bit more of a matched pair than, say, single malt scotch and blues.
Right, right.
You know, I wonder what Jim drinks. I mean, like, breaking character. I know he's Joe. We all know he's Joe Dawson. But last time I saw him perform, he had a string of, like, Rolling Rocks, like, down where he was performing. I mean, I know that he can...
Was he by any chance using them as a slide, his guitar?
That would have been cool.
Because that was the cool thing to do. You take your empty beer bottle, use it as a guitar slide, you know?
Yeah.
If you didn't have a slide yourself.
Now, I don't know if it's been confirmed or not. I know that Jim's going to be there, because we've mentioned that before. But I don't know if it's been confirmed if he's going to play on Cabaret Night, but I think that he's going to.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Right.
Well, I'm having a wonderful large cheese and chicken quesadilla and just sticking it, you know, in ranch dressing.
Jeez. That sounds so good.
So good.
That sounds so good.
I'm so grateful for ranch dressing, I'll tell you right now.
I'm so grateful for chicken quesadillas.
So. All right. Well, there we are. We're done. Let's head on out of Joe's. All right, here we are, Norm. This is the topic, the prize.
Yeah.
What is it really worth, man? Okay, point one, we're defining the prize here. And
right.
I'm going to go off some of your notes here. You got, in 1986 movie Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez reveals himself to Connor McLeod and as his mentor and advises him about the rules of the game, one of which... is the prize. Now, I want to take you back into time when you picked up that video cassette, I know, when you first saw it, off your video rental shelf, and you're watching this movie for the first time.
Right.
What the heck did you think he meant the prize was?
Well, I would assume that the prize would just, there would be a victor in the end. There would be somebody who wins. Because... there's the scene with the wrestling match and it's the battle royale. And in the end, there can be only one that even if you're on the same side, you still have to have only one person win a battle royale. So eventually somebody would win, but I didn't know what the prize was going to be. All I knew was that someone in the end has to win and you would get something. So it wasn't that clearly defined, you know, aside from the fact that there was going to be a winner.
Well, Ramirez says you must learn to conceal your special gift and harness it until the time of the gathering. And then Connor says, what's the gathering? Ramirez says, when only a few of us are left, we will feel an irresistible pull towards a faraway land and fight for the prize.
Right.
I'm trying to remember what my first thoughts were about this. I thought maybe you would get, you know, because I thought about more of it after you see the quickenings, you know. If you were down to the final two and you cut the head off, of course, at the time, we thought it was Connor because he defeats Kurgan, that the prize is part of the quickening, and then you're more powerful, and then what do you do with that? That there was still a question in my head. I mean, do you then become mortal and live out your life and die, or do you stay immortal and have the choice to either do good and better yourself and better humanity, or do you become a dictator and turn all the humans into slaves?
Well, I mean, a lot of that, there was a little bit that was alluded when he and Ramirez were talking in Connor's castle, if you will, and he said that if the Kurgan wins the prize, mankind will suffer an eternity of darkness. So I always felt that because the Kurgan was evil, and if he was the last person that's, you know, the last immortal that survived, he would just be really powerful and be able to, you know, influence the world as the Kurgan is evil. But it never really said anything about during the course of the movie that you would, well, let me put it this way. May I do my Ramirez voice for everybody?
Yes, please. Okay. I've been waiting. Come on.
Okay, so at the end of the movie, we really understand what Ramirez meant about the prize, the reveal of the prize. After Connor takes his quickening, he's like, I know everything. I am everything. Ramirez kind of sums it up as, I should be in my bathroom for this. Ramirez tells Connor in a disembodied voice, you're at one with all living things. Each man's thoughts and dreams are yours to know. You have power beyond imagination. Use it well, my friend. Don't lose your head. So, which is funny, because if he actually did lose his head at this stage, he would be dead. But Connor said that I can grow old. I can have children. Brenda, you can love me. I can live out a mortal life. When we heard about those ideas, we were like, okay, that's more powerful than what was previously described, because now he doesn't have to fight this immortal game anymore. He doesn't have to endure centuries of pain like he did with losing his wife, Heather. He didn't have to fight and live a life of paranoia and fear, because it's over. In 1986, he won the prize, and now it's over. But it didn't stay over, did it?
No, it did not. Okay, so let's talk about the Highlander, the series episode, The Gathering. Mm-hmm. Okay. You said here in the notes, at the time when The Gathering has not happened yet, contradicting canon from 1986, Connor describes what would have happened if an evil immortal win the prize. The last one will have the power to all the immortals who ever lived, enough power to rule this planet forever. If someone like Slan Quince is that last one, mankind will suffer an eternity of darkness from which we'll never recover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, obviously they had to kind of bend some more writing rules here to get the show launched.
As far as we've debated in the fandom community, when The Gathering took place, it's as if The Gathering of 1986 did not take place. It's just The Gathering continues.
Yes. You know, it's interesting, too, because, okay, so the scene with Grayson in the graveyard, it comes to my mind with Band of Brothers, where Grayson likes to hold, you know, business meetings with other immortals.
You love that scene.
I do.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, how he's trying to tempt Duncan for the next 100 years or whatever, and then Duncan says, well, this is the time of The Gathering. Don't you think we're going to be around for 100 years?
Right,
you
know? Right.
a couple things come to mind. First of all, if we do kind of whittle it down to a few, what about these other young immortals that start popping up? You know, these other mortal seeds. You know, what becomes of them? Or is it like, you know, many different immortal races? Meaning that is this the time of gathering for these immortals, and then boom, that winner wins, and then there's another set that they have to fight? All these things start coming up, so I've been kind of curious about that. But, you know, when it comes to the TV series, they had to kind of start anew because you were going to have almost the immortal of the week, mm-hmm. and, you know, and also allow the TV series to, you know, enrich the history and, I guess you'd say the mythos.
I love it when we use that word for so many different purposes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Of the Highlander universe here.
Right.
So, when the TV show was going on, mm-hmm. Norm, and I want to ask you, cause you were watching it at the time when it was coming out, mm-hmm. the prize to you, was this something that you always were, was it always on your mind? Was it something that you wanted yourself if you were an immortal?
That's a good question, because understanding the prize in 1986 is still understanding the prize in 1992 when the TV series came out, and that eventually, if I won, I would become mortal, I would be able to live a normal mortal life, and I would be able to have children. And it's the reason why we're talking about this, because I think that applies differently to every single person who you ask this question. I mean, let's go all the way back to Highlander 2. Highlander 2, Connor McLeod becomes immortal again. But the whole point of him fighting the gathering in 1986 was to become mortal. So why do you want to endure all of this? What's the point, right? Because in 1986, the immortals that we knew, the Kurgan, Connor, Castagir, Amon Fazil, Asta Vasilik, up to a point, Young Dal Kim up to a point, because these have been canonized since that film, and Ramirez, am I missing any? I think I got them all.
I think so.
Right? These were the fixed immortals that were fighting through time. We didn't have Darius. We didn't have Grayson. We didn't have the Four Horsemen. We didn't have Kronos. We didn't have even like lesser, older immortals, say like Rebecca or Amanda, who's 1,000 years old. You know, they didn't exist. So you didn't have to worry about this back catalog of all of these ancient immortals. We just had to deal with these finite immortals. So it's easy to get behind a champion and to root for that champion and to be the champion and say like, okay, it's all done and it's all over. But now, because you have to worry about the post-sustainability ideal of Highlander past these, well, at least the first movie and obviously the second movie, into the TV series, how do you manage that? How do you manage this ideal of an ultimate prize? Why are they doing this? Why are they enduring this? And then when you keep adding in mortals of, like, you know, centuries, millennia old, why do they do this? You know, is it just because they want to fight for good? Is it just because they want to fight for evil? Think about what you lose during the course of that millennia. You're going to have complete generations that you know grow old and die in front of you. Being born, grow old, and die in front of you. You're going to have, you know, families, friends, loved ones, wives, children, not children, but adopted children. So I guess it's like, what's the point?
I started thinking about, yeah, in my head canon, if you're going to try and wrap this around and, you know, you're with the TV series and now we're writing in all these other ancient immortals that have been around since the original 86 film. Maybe immortals are like prize fighters. You know, you got the ones that are active and that are fighting for the title, and then you got the retired ones. Or you got the ones that are in training, ready to step up for the next round of Who Wants the Prize?
Well, you know, I'd like to quote, like, David Abramowitz said this on the Blood of Kings page, and he extrapolates the fight of immortality to the fight for humankind. Humans will still fight for the side of good or for the side of evil, no matter if there's a timestamp or an end zone in sight. And I think that's what he's trying to say about the immortals, is that there is a side of good and then there's a side of evil. But at what cost? Think about the cost involved. And I think that's one of the things that I really wanted to hit home in this particular episode and this study of the prize, is at what cost?
Okay, well, let's touch on the points. You brought up some good points here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what exactly is the prize? I think we do need to touch on that a little bit. But you know what? If you don't mind, I want to push that towards the end here. Because I want to debate that a little bit more. What exactly is it, and you know what we think it should be mm-hmm. as well. And
then there is the source, however.
Yeah, if we're going to bring the that source, in,
right?
And what we would do if we were at that point to where we could gain the prize ourselves? What would happen to us?
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about. You said here in point two the sustainability of the idea of the prize post Highlander 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Highlander was never originally intended to have a sequel. Of course, there was. Animated series, television series, you know, all that. What does that do to the overall nature of the gathering and fighting for the prize? And there seems to be no end in sight. I think that's a really good point you brought up there, Norm.
Well, that's what I mean. It's great for the narrative structure, and it's great to tell stories. And obviously, let's put on our cynical hats here and just be realists for a second. Highlander is a product. It's a product that is supposed to sell advertising and to gain ratings. Obviously, it's supposed to be there to entertain, but what you want a series to do is you want a series to continue from season to season to season to season to season. You want that Cheers longevity, you know, or what is that show? Supernatural? It's like 13 seasons long. CSI is like a billion seasons long.
Right, right.
You want that in a television series. So if you do that to its logical conclusion, extrapolating that into the Highlander universe, you have to continue to add on challengers to your hero. But at the same time, you are extending the deadline of when that hero is going to actually win the fight. So you have to continually add backstory and backfill. And those are these immortals who inform us of who this hero is. Well, some of these are going to be friends of his. He's never going to kill.
Yeah.
So the ultimate prize is when there's only one immortal left. And I still think, let's go all the way back to 1986. Let me ask you a very pointed question, Kevin. I'm asking this to all of you out there too. Would Connor kill Castigir?
Yeah, no, I just don't see that happening. I don't.
Or do they adopt the fact that this is our fate? No matter what happens, we are driven to one last final fight. This is what we do.
And you kind of get the feeling that, and we've mentioned it before, that Connor, he's not really up for playing the game. He's kind of forced into fighting it because of the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I think he would just prefer to live his life and be alone and do what he does and go to wrestling matches.
Well, let me put it to you another way. Do you think that Connor and Castigir are friends from what we saw, or do you think there's just this very easy truce between them?
I think it's more than an easy truce, especially when we have the flashback of, you know, them talking about the boom boom and, you know, the drinking and
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I think it goes farther than that. So, you know, and that's just one of those things that we've debated in the past, you know, when two friends would end up being the final two, you know, maybe they're in love as well. Like maybe Duncan and Amanda, we've talked about that as well.
Right.
So yeah, it's interesting. Okay. So here, you have point three here. The reason for enduring the game mm-hmm. and the main point of this discussion is the prize really worth the pain, the agony, suffering, and loneliness that the immortals endure.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to cover what you said here about the original Highlander 1986 here.
Well, in 1986, when Connor wins the final prize, he screams out, "I know everything, I am everything." And then in that really gorgeous shot at the end in the Highlands of Scotland, he tells Brenda, he goes, "I know what you're thinking. Is I can love and have children. I can live and grow old." And until he won that prize, he was an immortal. He was sterile. He couldn't have children. These are the curses of immortality. But winning the very ultimate prize in the end allowed him to become a normal person. It allowed him to become what he was before the Kurgan killed him all the way back in 1536 in Glencoe, you know, on that battlefield. Well,
right. Yeah.
Where they shot that battlefield sequence. So you have that. So mortality, with the combined essences of all the immortal who have ever lived, is that's the prize. You're mortal, but you have all of this knowledge. So what are you going to do with that? But is it worth really enduring all of that? Is it worth really enduring the centuries of what you've seen, what you've lost, friends that come, friends that go, lovers, adopted children? Like Connor adopted Rachel back in World War II. She was a child. And then eventually he would have to watch her die because she grew old in front of him, much like Heather did. So was it really worth it? Is it really worth it just to win that ultimate prize? Or are there other circumstances? Because Connor, for me, I'm not sure for you, but and everyone else, he never felt to me like he was the crusader, the champion of good. He felt like, you know what? The only reason why I'm doing this is because I don't want the Kurgan to win.
Right.
You know, do you feel about it that way?
Yeah. I think there's, you know, you touched that here. I think there's some immortals that fight so evil can't win, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could also be definitely for Connor, you know?
Yeah.
I also feel that's a little bit of Duncan too. You know, a lot of the good immortals, you know, even Fitz, I think that, you know, they will live their lives, but if they're challenged or if they see a bigger evil that's a threat, they'll step in and do something about it if they have to. You know?
I mean, but think about it. Like, evil is easy to rectify their motive. They're evil. They want to rule humanity. They want power. But I have one exception to that rule with evil immortals, and we'll get to that in a second. So you have your Kurgans, you know, you have your Kallises, you have your Graysons. You know, these are big, powerful, evil immortals. And they want evil. They want they want their evil to be influenced over the world. They want to be able to weigh their, you know, their goals and their ultimate ends on humanity with that knowledge. But that's evil. It's easy to say that that's what evil does. But good is a much harder fight, because what does that mean? Like, what does it mean to be like this? Are you fighting for nobility? Are you fighting because fighting to win just so that evil doesn't win doesn't seem good enough for me to endure all of this suffering. Do you know what I mean?
It's true. Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, that's where I'm getting at with this. Is it really worth it? Like, what are they losing as opposed to what are they gaining? I mean, aside from the ultimate prize, and I get that, but do you think any of these immortals are really like, oh my gosh, in the end, I can have children again? Do you really think that that's their end thought result?
Well, it's hard to say what the end thought result is, because it's not like there's a handbook for an immortal that says, if you win, this is what you get. You know?
Right.
I don't think there's anything that's considered canon that would say you become mortal and you can have children and have a family and do what you want to do and die. Or you can choose to either be peaceful or become a tyrant. You know, though?
There's a very specific thing, though, in the source. And yes, I'm going to bring this up because the source is part of the Highlander universe. I don't care if you agree with me or not. It is. It's a movie. It's out there. It has Highlander on it. It's officially produced. It is part of the canon, whether or not you agree with it. So there's a very big, there are the rules in the beginning. In the very end, the very last rule, I think it was like number 5, is like, immortals cannot have children. And it was like the last, you know, the credits kind of like disappeared as these rules went down. It was the last one. It's like, that's the point of the source, is that there's a way for a mortal to have children. They're returning to that particular aspect of immortality. Now, I don't agree with the way that it was, the narrative unfolded, but it still returned back to that. And it obviously means that it was important to the story at one point in time. So I just don't see like Amanda saying like, you know what, I'm going to fight this game until I can have children again. Yeah. I just don't see that happening.
I see her wanting it for other reasons.
Well, sure, you know? Sure. You know, but that's what I mean, though. Not every immortal is going to be fighting this fight to get to the prize for any one of those particular reasons per se, specifically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you brought up something interesting here. Let's use Brian Cullen and Lord Byron as two immortals who have become so numb with the game that they weren't even fighting for the prize. They were waiting for what it means just to feel alive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Touch on that a little bit.
I loved those two specific immortals for the episodes that they were in, especially like Brian Cullen, because Brian Cullen, not only was he immortal, but he was like the greatest sword fighter in Europe. He was like never beaten. So that every single person, mortal or immortal, that challenged him, he had to fight. And why? He was enduring all of this just so that he could live a life of being challenged, just to look over his shoulder on a daily basis, which is why he turned to opium originally in like San Francisco. And then he continued that addiction. I mean, it's not like he's going to die from an overdose.
Yeah.
Right. So he needed something just to endure. But is enduring good enough? Like, that's like one of the best examples of what's the point of the prize. If Brian Cullen ended up winning for whatever reason, he's just enduring because he doesn't want to die. But he's not enduring. He's not fighting because he wants to win. Those are two completely different concepts, you know? Like, fighting right. to win is Duncan. Duncan wants to win because he doesn't want evil to win. And he wants to protect people. He's the protector. He's the champion, right? That's the whole point of the whole Zoroastrian demon prophecy, that, you know, he's the champion, the Mac Cloud. But Brian Cullen's like, you know, I don't know. Okay, whatever. I don't care. You know, the same thing with Lord Byron. Lord Byron being the poet, and that was a really super cool episode, you know, watching that, the modern Prometheus. He's just there like, you know what? I'm so dead inside. I'll do anything it takes just to feel some kind of spark of life. And you see that, I quote unquote say that because that's the whole point of that episode, was to show Mary Shelley's Frankenstein the spark of life. So he was just like, I don't care. I really don't. Whatever. I'll just do whatever. But he wasn't evil for evil's sake. But at the same time, though, he was still part of the game. So, I mean, when you look at the grand picture of it, you have hundreds, if not thousands, of immortals out there. How do you get to the final prize?
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like it's a thread that really unraveled itself in terms of a concept when you had to sustain multiple seasons of this particular product, which is Highlander.
Okay, so briefly, if Amanda wins a prize, what does she do?
I don't know. Amanda doesn't have the motivations as a character for that. Her character is to motivate Duncan.
Yeah, I think she'd want to end up with Duncan personally.
That means that there's no prize.
I think they'd be fine with that.
Well, but that's the point. That's the point of all of this.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
If Fitzcairn wasn't killed by Kallus in Starcrossed, they wouldn't kill each other.
No.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
So think and yes, there are those characters like Brian Cullen and Lord Byron, but let's look at kind of like the characters that were on the side of good, the side of fun. Would Duncan and Richie fight in the end if Richie weren't killed? Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a part of me that I could see Richie trying to make a play for it, though. I could see him just because he's got the rebellious side, that kind of stubborn side in him as well.
Yeah.
Kid O'Brady, besides sneezing a few times,
right?
That means he would never sneeze again if he won the prize.
There was a small debate, maybe a little bit of an argument sometime in the Blood of Kings forums, where somebody said that good and evil would eventually equalize themselves so that you wouldn't have these right. instances. In my opinion, I thought that's kind of like a cop-out debate, because you're basically saying, well, bad things happen to good people. I get that. But I don't think that holds true in this argument. You just can't say that eventually there are going to be one good and one bad. Because let's get to point four. What about those who don't want the prize?
Okay, wait, hold on. Before you go to point four, though, I want to talk about Damon Case real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Was he the one that was in the Immortal Chamoli episode?
Yes.
Okay. He was the one that was all about playing the game.
Correct.
And I think that's worth mentioning again, because we talked about this. He was a perfect example of how the game is played in the strictest, most technical ways. He was all about the rules and playing the game and, you know, doing the challenge and, you know, and going basically going to the next level each time that he could. I thought that was a really good example of that.
Well, Damon Case was neither good nor evil. You know, you really have to look at your perceptions of it, because Duncan said, well, the Immortal Chamoli, like Danny Chamoli was just, he's a newborn immortal. He doesn't know anything. He hasn't even been mastered yet. And Damon Case is like, that's not my problem. That's not in the rules.
Yeah.
He is an immortal. Yeah. I'm an immortal. We're supposed to fight and there can be only one. So does that make Damon Case evil? I don't think so. He's playing by the rules.
Right.
And he's not like, you know, murdering puppies along the way or raping and pillaging and burning villages down. No, he's just like, when two immortals encounter each other, he doesn't know exactly that immortal's training, background, history, whatever. I don't care. He doesn't care. He's like, that's the rules.
Yeah, no, good point. Yeah. I thought we had to touch on him because that was a good example of that. Okay, Now back to point four here. What about those that don't want the prize? And It's funny because you got some interesting examples here. The Four Horsemen.
All of my examples are pretty epic though, right?
Yes, they are.
Right.
They wanted to rule, rape, pillage, and plunder no matter what century or millennia. If Kronos and Mythos wanted the prize for themselves, they would have to have orchestrated some kind of treachery.
Right.
But Kronos wanted to get the band back together.
Always did. He had his original four all the way back to the Bronze Age, and he had Kronos, Mythos, Caspian, and Silas. And those guys were successful at what they did for the longest time. And then the band broke up. And then even Kronos said when he was Melvin Korin that he tried to put the Four Horsemen back together, but he just got trash and people that he couldn't trust. But he could trust these four. Even Mythos he could trust because he knew how Mythos thought. You know, he always said that, I know you better than you know yourself. So what if the Four Horsemen maintained that pact? That means there will always be four, not just two, but four, so that the prize would never be won. So then why do they want to do what they want to do? Because they just want to endure the raping, the pillaging, the suffering, you know, spreading disease and famine and war and pestilence and all that kind of stuff. But there will never be an ultimate winner. There will never be an ultimate prize with those four, which breaks it down into the subcomponents of who they are.
Yeah. Kronos wanted to try to continue the work of the Four Horsemen, obviously. Interesting. Okay, so Mythos, he stayed alive longer than any other mortal and has the records of the Watchers to actually eliminate any or all of his competition.
Mm-hmm.
So why hasn't he maneuvered himself to win the ultimate prize? Mm-hmm. I have a theory.
Let's hear it.
And you kind of see it in the way Peter Wingfield portrays him in a way. And there were certain scenes that I kind of got a Fitzcarron vibe out of Mythos. He enjoyed being who he was. And, you know, he was also very good at not being noticed, you know,
mm-hmm.
and not wanting to be seen by other immortals. But I think he wants to just live. I mean, to be honest with you, if you're over 5,000 years old, why would you want to try to get the prize when you're not quite sure what it is and what it will do and take away what you're doing now? I think he also has a lust for history. I think there's also a part of him too that is kind of the watcher of the watchers, that he wants to make sure that not only are the immortals in check, but the watchers are as well.
Do you think he's just trying to keep the status quo?
Yeah, exactly.
So that means that, again, there would be no prize. You know, yeah. It's kind of like, it goes all the way back to when the fans were decrying canon and saying that this is terrible storytelling and Kane is buried in the mountains of Neri in the Kano's cave. And how could Connor win in 1986 when Kane was still alive? Actually, Kane, Kabul Khan, and Cannon Fodder. Remember, we called him Cannon Fodder.
Yeah.
You know, but there were three immortals. Technically, there were still four immortals left on the Earth. So how could Connor win? And they don't even really address that in Highlander 3. But at the same time, if there's an immortal out there who wants to kind of stay out of the game, stay out of the limelight, and not put himself out there at risk.
Like Darius?
Thank you for that segue. Yes. Because Darius removed himself from the game. Once he established that light quickening, he turned his focus away from war, betrayed Grayson, and went to Holy Ground. Now, Holy Ground, we know, aside from the Watchers, was the one place where immortals could do no violence. So he was safe. So if you want to stay on Holy Ground for the rest of your life, like, say, Duncan did when he was on the Lakota Holy Ground Sanctuary, what do? You can't fight him there, or can you? It really depends on which rule the rules of the game that you're following. But, and that brings up a good point, because if you don't care about it, like Kane didn't care about it, and it was just tradition and not a rule, Grayson would have marched right up on Darius and killed him himself, right?
Yeah.
But Darius chose Holy Ground because he knew he was safe there, which removed him from the game. Connor removed himself from the game in the Sanctuary when in Highlander Endgame, which we're very excited to discuss. So he removed himself from the game. There is no Connor McLeod, and that means that there can be no prize. It was a pact that he made with the Watchers. The Watchers said, if there's no Last Immortal, there's no prize. There's no eternity of, you know, of darkness or whatever, you know, with an evil immortal winning, or there's no dominion over men. Right? So again, you're doing all of this knowing that the possible machinations of every single faction of every single mortal's in play. So why? What's the point?
I want you to elaborate here. You also mentioned Sean Burns and Sigur. Mm-hmm. Most of Duncan's mentors seem to arm their champions like Duncan with ways to fight for the prize, but in the end there can be only one. So clarify.
Where's their motivation, right? So Sean Burns was Duncan's mentor. He was, after Werner Stalker died as Darius, they created the character of Sean Burns to become a mentor-like figure. And then obviously Duncan, we saw Duncan kill him, you know, in Deliverance. Or was it Something Wicked? Something Wicked. No, it wasn't Deliverance when he went to Paris. He killed Sean Burns. So there's that example of, well, eventually evil and good will balance themselves out. But that's besides the point. When you have somebody like a Sean Burns or Sigur, they're not really interested in fighting the fight, but they are interested in making sure that their champions are armed with being able to fight the fight. So gotcha. If Duncan is up to a level and Sean Burns is still alive, again, does Duncan kill Sean Burns to win the prize? Does Sean Burns sacrifice himself so Duncan does win the prize? You know what I mean?
I could see that.
You know, so, but I mean,
more likely to happen.
There's so many factors that go against being an ultimate winner. You know, one of the biggest factors is if there are two people of like dispositions. You know, if they're friends, or if they're both matters, men of honor, if they're both those who didn't, they just don't want to fight. Or like I said, you know, Kronos and the Four Horsemen, you know, if they don't want to fight each other, they won't fight each other. So it's, again, because you've added so many immortals to the equation, there's so much to track in terms of motivations.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's hit on the last point here, and this is an interesting one, mm-hmm. and I'm glad how you brought in the animated series on this.
You like that?
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. If there can be only one, what happens if there are a handful of immortals left who care for one of another, mm-hmm. like the Jeditors of the animated series? What if there's a pact that none of the remaining handful of mortals fight and they do lay down their weapons and their collective knowledge together instead of just one?
I think that was brilliant. I really do. I think, you know, when we kind of, you know, made fun and poked fun of the animated series because it's not a great animated, like animated quality series. But the more we watched it, the more that we saw, like, the storytelling was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we'll return to that later on in a future episode. But
you sure about that?
Yes. Yes, we will. We're going to finish it. But in all honesty, I thought that was a really interesting idea. What if the immortals were like, you know what? Let's put our differences aside. We may not be friends, but we know that whatever happened to the earth, the catastrophe that happened is far greater than our own personal vendettas against each other. So let's not fight, which means there is no prize, which means there can be only one, does not mean anything, which means let's go for a different purpose. Let's pivot this and turn it into something different. And that means that all of their collective knowledge is not in one person. It's in a group of people. You know, but it's not in one person. And maybe those immortals have lasted for centuries, if not millennia, and they've suffered and fought all this time to get to a certain point, and then all of a sudden, let's all make a pact and draw the olive branch here and move towards peace instead of fighting.
Right. Or, you know, just, and I'm trying to throw that scenario into, you know, a what if from either the movies or the TV series. And we've touched on what if Amanda and Duncan got together, or what if it was, you know, Mythos and, you know, Amanda or something like that.
Well, let's go like to a different one. Let's say like Duncan and Gabriel Patone. They were friends.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, they had an uneasy peace between them, but they were friends. The same thing with Duncan and Annie Devlin.
Right. Yeah.
So these are those kind of instances where, yeah, Annie had a beef against Richie, but she didn't have a beef against Duncan.
When you look back at all the immortals, which immortal, for interesting reasons, would you say you would not want to win the prize?
Not want to win the prize?
Yeah.
Probably Jim Koltek after he took his dark quickening.
Yeah.
Because he was evil. You know, like irrationally evil, like skin puppies right. evil.
Yeah.
That kind of evil. Yeah.
Daimler. Yeah, that'd be a bad dude.
Actually, well, I mean, for all intents and purposes, evil Duncan. Because now you have like an evil immortal who has his combat skills like no other. So that's a bad combination.
I wouldn't want Kenny to win either, just because you'd have a Napoleon complex forever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you have something here that's interesting. The one mm-hmm. question that was never answered, in going full circle back to Highlander 1986, Norm.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Take it away.
Okay, so one of the reasons why this popped up in my head is because, you know, thinking about the 1986 movie, there's one particular scene. It's the training sequence when Ramirez is telling Connor everything he needs to know about being an immortal. And he's training him, and he's training him, and he's training him. And I figured, what's the point of this? Because when Connor says to Ramirez, if it came down to just us two, would you take my head? And Ramirez just says, Right? So
yeah,
what compels someone? Like Ramirez was 2,246.47. I'm sorry, I don't have that off the top of my head. I should. But he's,
oh, darn you.
I know, darn me.
Oh, darn you, Norm.
Take a drink.
I'm going to hold that against you.
So 2,400, I don't know, something like that. Anyway, the point is that Ramirez has, you know, two millennia over Connor. And he knows that eventually he's going to have to fight Connor. So why doesn't he choose to do what the Kurgan did and kill him when he could? When he has nothing. You know, he has no training. He has no experience. Nothing. Sure, his quickening would be, you know, just a fart in the wind, if you will. But what drives those immortals to train other immortals to continue the game? Why not just take them out when you can? Right? Is it a question of morality? Is it a question of, well, I'm going to train him so that if he actually meets other mortals, he can thin out the other mortals that he meets so that eventually I will be able to get on top. There's a strategy involved, I think, in something like that. But maybe I'm just reading too much into it. Bottom line is that when Connor said, if it's just us two and we're friends and you're my mentor, are we going to fight? And Ramirez didn't give him an answer.
What do you think?
I think in the movies they would. Because it's the same kind of understanding that he and Castor had on the bridge. You know, they both had their hands in their jackets, and they're like, you know, Connor has, you know, he pulled out an open hand, and then Castor pulled out a flask. Sure, they're friends, but I think there's an understanding between those immortals, the movie immortals, where they're like, you know what, we're going to have to fight, but we don't have to make it unpleasant right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember this was brought up, and we're reminded that, and it's been debated on Blood of Kings, that I think that we could all say, you know, yes, this immortal, that immortal could end up together and they're friends and they would not fight and therefore there would not be the prize. But there's a couple of people on Blood of Kings that had, when we were touched on this earlier, that said there's that irresistible pull to the gathering, and that I think that something would come over them to not necessarily force them to fight, but they would feel the urge to do so. And in one way or another, it would be inevitable. What do you think about that?
It's a good theory. I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, you have to weigh the canon of the films versus the canon of the TV show. And in the end, I think the canon of the TV show wins out because there's just so much more you have to weigh. I really do think that eventually, if there were two immortals like a Duncan and Amanda, I even think that Amanda said, you know, let's just disappear. Let's go on a deserted island and just hide for, you know, a couple thousand years and wait until this all blows over, when they were going to be exposed by the Watcher CD. So if they did that, then there's no prize. You know, any immortal can hide on holy ground and continue the game. So I just don't see, like, if there were an irresistible pull towards a faraway land, then why do you have some of the immortals feel like they can just hide forever on holy ground like Darius? And Darius was very powerful. So that doesn't really gel with that theory, with that logic. But then again, the Highlander is replete with holes in logic, so you know.
Really?
just a couple. But
okay, so as we wrap this up, Norm, mm-hmm. I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
If you could look at all of the Highlander lore out there, take away all the people that have been killed, maybe some of your favorite characters or what have you. Mm-hmm. If you could choose one immortal or two or maybe more that came to the final gathering and it was just them or that person, who would you want it to be and why?
Oh, gosh. In the end, I think that, well, Mythos is going to be there. I don't know if he's going to fight, but he'll be in the end. And he may choose to fight. I don't know. That's a hard question, Kevin. I don't think I have an answer for that. I really don't. I mean, it might be Duncan, you know, but that's the thing is that's just kind of like that. That's just the prejudice of being influenced by the show. I really don't know. You know, it's who would, I mean, how about you? You asked.
This is like my fan script here. Okay. So we get down to the final two.
Mm-hmm.
No, excuse me. The final three. Okay. Mythos has sacrificed himself, and Duncan has taken his quickening, okay? Because there's this bigger threat out there. And that bigger threat is Annie Devlin.
Hmm.
Annie Devlin is around still, and she's a menace, but Duncan and Amanda are still there, and Annie comes up and says, I want my man. I want Duncan. And, of course, you know, Amanda's like, nope, not going to happen. And they have this full-on, like, cat fight, sword fight thing going on. And Duncan's just sitting there going, hot.
But then...
And, of course, Amanda wins, gets the quickening, and then they live happily ever after.
Hold on, I'm gonna add a little bit of spice. I'm gonna throw a little bit of a curveball in there. So... Annie loses to Amanda. Amanda is in the throes of the quickening, is completely drained from his power. Then out of nowhere, Felice Martin comes out of the shadows.
No!
And Joan Jett becomes the immortal supreme after she kills Duncan, then kills Amanda. Because she's still out there, too.
Wonder how many eyes are rolling out there right now.
I'm sure there are a couple of eye rolls during this whole episode. But I, you know what? When I first proposed this, and... if you don't mind me going into the final thoughts right now, one of the reasons why I proposed this in all seriousness, because the prize itself is a very fluid idea and concept. Sure, it works well when there's only six competitive combatants involved in a story, but it doesn't really work as a sustainable ideal when you have to continue a story for the conventions of a television series. You still have to move the narrative forward. There are a lot of immortals that were introduced that were really great. There are a lot of immortals that were introduced because you needed to make your hero feel like he was being threatened, a la Grayson, a la the Four Horsemen, a la some of the mortals, like the Watchers. But it doesn't necessarily help the finite ideal of there's going to be an ultimate winner eventually to this prize, because, you know, the first movie begat the TV series. The TV series begat the TV series version of the movies, like Endgame and The Source, and those things had to rectify certain parts of the lore. So in the end, there can't be only one, I think, is the final point I'm trying to make. Because if you make the final one as an ideal, then there's no more storytelling.
It'd be boring.
You know, yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like in 1986, like I said, they weren't planning on sequelizing this movie. So, yeah. And they had to write themselves out of a corner. So they just say, hey, you know what? Let's throw all the rules out the window in a way and just continue the story.
You know who would have been fun duo to be the final two? Would have been Fitz and Mythos. That would have been a fun
one. Fitz and Kid O'Brady?
Oh, there you go.
They're just two happy-go-lucky gremlins, right? You know, just kind of farting around and just having fun. And so, yeah, that's just the way I see it. I don't think that if you're going to, and this is going to be an interesting thing that Chad Stahelski is going to have to tackle, because if he's going to do a trilogy, does the trilogy end? Obviously, the trilogy has to end with your hero as the winner, or does it?
Yeah. That's true. I'm curious to see where he's going to take that. So, yeah. Wow. Well, before we end this, though, I actually have an Immortal Buzz subject I wanted to bring up, Norm. That's not the notes here. We got an email. And I wanted to, well, first of all, I want to remind people, do you want your emails right here on Bloody Kings? Do you want to be, you know, mentioned and, you know, send us emails. We'd love to get emails. And also the iTunes contest, too. Make sure you get on that because we'd love to do a show for you. But we do answer emails here. And we got another email from one of our longtime listeners and contributors, Super Swede.
Super Swede. Nice.
Yes. Peter Engstrom, mm-hmm. also a big, big football fan as well. He listens to our End Zone podcast that Kyle and I do for football. So appreciate that and tweets us and retweets. Always love that. He says, hello, guys. Some quick thoughts on the IDW Highlander The American Dream comic review. I agree with a lot of the illustration's criticisms you had. Perhaps my biggest issue is with the art. Besides not being able to tell Connor and Vasilek apart at times, was the depiction of the sword fight action sequences. I felt it had a very little flow and it looked a lot too rigid while looking at it. I have no doubt it must be difficult to illustrate an action sequence, but I've seen it done successfully in comics many times before. Perhaps it's just impossible to translate a fluid sword fight onto a comic book page. But where swordplay is an integral to the Highlander, I feel in this case it missed the mark. Overall, I felt the series was simply okay, not horrific, but nothing special. It's my hope that IDW becomes its Highlander run with other series, or continues its Highlander run with other series. They can improve the artwork and maybe tighten up whatever story they come up with a bit more. Lastly, I'd like to personally give a massive shout out to James Richards for his help on my Highlander CCG collection. Recently, my 2-year-old boy got a hold of my CCG binder and wiped out several rare.
Oh, God.
wiped out several rare to uncommon cards, many of which I'd only had one copy of. I contacted James and was able to provide me with replacement cards for everyone that was damaged or destroyed.
Yeesh.
Anyone out there needs to purchase Highlander CCG cards, he's definitely your man. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. Peter Engstrom, a.k.a.
Super Swede.
So I thought that was really cool. I'm glad he gave us his feedback on the comic. And Norm, I know you weren't on that episode, but I know you had a few thoughts about it. And you had similar criticisms about the art as well. Mm-hmm. Overall, I think we thought the story was okay.
Yeah, you know, that was episode 51, I believe. And, you know, it's hard to do a comic book. It really is. It's hard to put the team together. It's hard to get the talent together. Everything has to do with budget. And I understand what Super Swede's saying about it's hard to do a fluid type of combat sequence, but when you're dealing with, say, rock star artists like a Jim Lee or a Joe Madureira or artists of that nature, or J. Scott Campbell, you can. But those artists come with a price.
This is true. This is very, very true. Well, Norm, this has been a very cool topic. This was your baby. I appreciate you bringing it up. You know what? I'm going to give you a Duncan Kierdwin, number 8 on Kevin's Immortal Quickening scale.
Oh, thank you very much.
And also your great notes, too. So that would be a very good, very, very good quickening right there. So definitely.
I will live with that. Oh, would they fight?
Ooh.
Let's take this. Okay, let's spend like about 2 minutes, right? Because we have like,
sure,
okay,
sure,
so
okay.
Let's go down through your scale here and see who would fight and why. And we're going to go from all four horsemen we know wouldn't fight. right?
Yes, okay.
So let's see, Methos and Darius, we already covered them. Duncan and Caerdwin, will they fight?
I could see that happening. Yeah, I think
I can see them having an understanding that they would have to. They're warriors.
Yeah.
You know, they would
do
that. We obviously know that Connor and the Kurgan would fight.
Yes, that was number seven. Yep.
Xavier and Amanda, number six, they would fight. Good
Definitely.
And evil.
Yep.
Five, Luther and Hugh Fitzcairn, would they fight?
Yes.
Of course they
definitely.
Would.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting one. Because they're both evil, Canis or Anthony Galen, number four.
Yeah, dogs against the wrestler. most definitely, I think so, yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. Who would win in a fight between the Immortal Chimoli and a random Iron Pipe? Number
three.
The
Iron Pipe would, I'm sorry.
And the Iron Pipe would challenge Chimoli because the Iron Pipe is a jerk.
Yes.
I don't think that there's any, like, I don't think there's any doubt that Duncan's 1964 Black Thunderbird would win in a fight against Michael Christian. They would fight. Michael Christian's like so irrational, he would actually just attack the car in general.
Yeah.
If Rita told him to fight that car, he would fight it.
But I think the Thunderbird would run him over and then run him back over again to make sure that he was down.
But the most important fight here is General Katana. Would he fight and would he win against the awesomeness that is Richie's Green Jacket?
Nope. Would not. I think Richie's Green Jacket has the edge there.
I actually think that Richie's Green Jacket got in more fights than Katana did.
Yes. Well, it's been really fun talking about episode 55 here, the prize, what it is really worth. And we encourage our listeners and fans on Blood of Kings or what have you, please give us some feedback. Tell us what you think, too. We want to remind people briefly that there is a lot of other topics that we're talking about across all the shows of the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, recently on Blood of Kings, we talked about the Armory Chronicles, the Weapons of Highlander Season 1 with our editor-in-chief there, Mr. Mike Sellers, the Immortal Chimoli. That was a lot of fun. Our Culture Clash weekly show, it's our weekly fandom show that I co-host with Kyle. We've also recently done, with you, Norm, we did a great special talking about both Discovery and the Orville, Star Trek show, and a show inspired by Star Trek. And so we're really, really excited about that, and make sure you check that out. We also have Couch Potato Theater. We've been a little busy over there. Recently just recorded Doomsday with Kyle. We also are doing a Blade Runner special as well, and we have G.I. Joe the Movie. You can go check our back catalog, and, of course, Planet of the Apes. Time Warp.
Let me interrupt you for a second. I just thinking about Doomsday, and I like Doomsday a lot, but the whole, like, marketing premise on Doomsday with this girl with, like, the tattoos and the crazy eyes, and she was really built and good-looking. Didn't she die in, like, 2 seconds?
Halfway through the film, because she had the look, she was put on all the packaging.
Right.
She was not the Rona Mitra lead character.
Right.
The actress, though, was a stunt woman and a former model and beauty contestant.
Sure.
So she's really pretty. She died halfway through.
Yeah, I was like, she showed up and died. I'm like, wow, okay. There's marketing 101. Yep. There you go.
Spoiler alert, she had her head chopped off. 1987, the movies, our Time Warp special. We are 3 episodes in out of 4. So make sure you check that out. There's all the celebrating all the movies that are now 30 years old, including, what is out there? RoboCop, Fatal Attraction, Lost Boys, and, of course, The Princess Bride, Dirty Dancing, Adventures in Babysitting. Mm-hmm. Talked about a lot of stuff for that third part. So part 4 will be coming out a little bit later. We also have the Alfred Hitchcock podcast, Good Evening, with Tom, Brandon, and Chris, covering all things of the master of suspense himself, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock.
If I may interject for a second. Yes, I'm trying to do an Alfred Hitchcock type of accent, and it's not working. But Good Evening is actually a really fantastic podcast.
You sounded like Kirk on like a really bad emphysema attack or something.
All of my imitations are Kirk in some form or another. You know that. And I've been challenged. I think that our friends over there at the Alan R. Ryan. He said
Oz Fans
Radio.
He
challenged me. He's like, you know, what can you do? How long can you do a William Shatner impersonation? I'm like, name a movie and I will do it. So,
We also have the End Zone, our weekly football podcast that Kyle and I do. Now that it's football season, we're doing it weekly, so make sure you check that out as well.
The End Zone, fantastic podcast.
And just to tease, in case you haven't seen it already, we're having we're doing another little Orville, and shall we just say it now? What we're doing, Norm?
Sure, I think we can announce that now. It's something.
Yeah, I'll let you do it. Go ahead.
So Kevin and I are both really huge fans of Star Trek, and in the last few weeks, when the Orville was released and Star Trek Discovery was released, we did a very special podcast on Culture Clash. It was a Culture Clash special covering both the Orville and Star Trek Discovery. Well, we're going to go into a little bit of a different format now. We're going to do a little bit more of a specific look and a deep dive look on both of those shows, because we feel that it is responsible for us on the Fandom Podcast Network to provide you, our listeners, a little bit more of a specialized show, because these shows are really good. No matter what the hype out there on social media may say, if you really take a look at the quality of these shows, the production's fantastic, their hearts are fantastic, their reasons for doing the show are fantastic, and it's just a really good time to be a fan of science fiction again, because they're both Star Trek in spirit, even though one is only Star Trek in name.
And the name of this podcast?
Oh, I'm sorry. I usually leave those big introductions to you. So this podcast is called Discoville.
There you go. Yeah. Disco like Discovery and Ville like Orville.
Discoville.
That's great. Well, I'm really excited about this because both of these shows, in my opinion, have exceeded my expectations. And I had expectations definitely for Star Trek Discovery. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited with where that's going, but I'm really happy that Orville is doing what it's doing, and it has surpassed and exceeded my expectations as well. So, So if you're a fan of both Star Trek and Orville, make sure you check out that podcast. We're not sure how long it's going to go. Maybe just as long as the episodes are airing, and we'll take a little break when they're not airing. But we definitely want to give our takes on it because we're passionate about both those properties. So great. Well, Norman, thank you very much. Anything else you'd like to say about this particular episode that we're doing?
Well, here? Of course, we want to hear like all of the feedback that you have. So make sure that you get in touch with us on all the different ways that we discussed about how you can contact us earlier in the show, because the prize is one of those really kind of vague kind of ideas that Highlander supposedly is based on. Well, not supposedly is based on, but supposedly we know what it is. So what do you think about the prize? Do you think it's been well-defined? Do you think it's worth the fight of the immortals? And you feel that it's worth the sacrifice that some of these immortals make? And I'd love to know if you agree or disagree with anything that we're saying here. So please let us know about that. And if you write us in an email like Supersweet did, your email may be read on a future episode of Blood of Kings. But this is one of the grand ideas of Highlander. And it's just something that it's out there. And I think that we take that for granted when it comes to Highlander in general, because in and of itself, it's a great concept, but it's not necessarily always sustained in the right way. So that's something that made me scratch my head a little bit for something to talk about here on Blood of Kings.
All right. Cool. Well said, man. Well, appreciate it. Please give us your feedback. Like Norm said, we'd love to hear from you. And thanks again for everyone that's listening and participating on Blood of Kings. And Norm and I are really excited to see those of you that are going to the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention there at the Crown Plaza at LAX. So we're really excited about that. Well, I'm Kevin. On behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you are feeling is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.